And now continuing our series of Things I Hate, number 37, when a friend asks, "So what did you talk about on your most recent show?" Next time they ask, I'm going to say, "I talked about you." Money Machine. Show 82. Second week of October. Hello, everyone. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome back to the Mad Money Machine. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for downloading me on your podcast listening device or computer. Got a lot of fun stuff to talk about on this show, including a tool in the crib that is very much like a financial flea market, baseball cards as an investment, the David Beckham moment, international small cap ETFs coming out, the example spreadsheet from the previous show, the next Nobel Prize winner in economics, and we'll have a spin at Guru Roulette. The Mad Money Machine is proud to have been sponsored by Index Funds Advisors low these many months and continues to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. And on this show, we will feature words from Mark Hebner from his own podcast on Step 10, since this is October, Risk Capacity. You know, sometimes you hear people lamenting the fact that they didn't keep their baseball cards from when they were a kid because, oh, today that baseball card that they bought for a pack for what, 20 for a nickel, today would be worth $50. Well, how long ago did that baseball card cost you 5 cents? And what would the worth of, how much that would that nickel be worth if you had invested it in the stock market instead? Or the Index Folio 100. Maybe you should lament that. And so, of course, just as a test, I went to the Benchmark Your Portfolio tool, chose Portfolio 100, and let's say that the baseball card came out in 1930. So I put a nickel in for January 1st, 1930 to September 30th, 2007, and that nickel would have grown to $661 in that time frame. I think it's a better investment than baseball cards. Major League Soccer may yet get its David Beckham moment. That they've been paying, the LA Galaxy's been paying, what, $50 million for something that hasn't happened so much so far. David Beckham's played in 3 Major League Soccer League games and 2 other games with the LA Galaxy so far this year. After the ankle injury and the knee injury, well, he is apparently recuperating. And just when you thought LA Galaxy was completely out of contention, it turns out that if they continue winning like they have been recently, 4 games in a row, in fact, if they continue winning, they will make it to the playoff bracket of 8 teams that can then compete for the MLS Cup. This is the storybook ending to the David Beckham moment that I'm sure that MLS is hoping for. And what do you think the chances are that the storybook moment will, in fact, happen when there's so much money on the line? Yeah, okay. A new ETF, or 2 or 3, are coming out. Barclays Global Investors is going to come out later this year with some international small-cap exchange-traded funds. First of all, the iShares MSCI EAFE Small Cap Index Fund. The iShares MSCI Emerging Markets Small Cap Fund. That one looks interesting. And the iShares MSCI Japan Small Cap Fund. It says they will charge 0.40% in annual expenses for the EAFE, 0.75% for the Emerging Markets Small Caps, and 0.59% for the Japan Fund. I think that Emerging Markets Small Cap Fund looks interesting. I'm going to keep my eye out for that one. And now a song from BootyUSA.com and their Best of Booty 2006 CD. Track number 9, Artie Fufkin. Crazy Logic, mashup of Gnarls Barkley and Supertramp and Rockwell. on the previous show, the tool in the crib was the SMF, the add-in for Excel. I don't know how many folks have downloaded this example spreadsheet that I've put out at the tools page for show 81 or in the show notes of show 81. The spreadsheet, when you download it, is called Automatic Portfolio Returns. And just to tell you a little bit about that spreadsheet, what you can do is you can go in and change the date under recent price. Change that to be yesterday's date, whatever yesterday happens to be for you. And it will recalculate then for you automatically the three portfolios that are given in there. The IFA Index Folio 100, the iShares 100 Proxy, I call it, and the Vanguard ETF 100 Proxy. And as of yesterday, October 10th, 10-10-07, the index folio was up 11.82% for the year. The iShares proxy of that was up 11.8% for the year, and the Vanguard proxy was up 11.46% for the year. And so these are tracking each other fairly well. Now, if you are not interested in the index folio 100, and say instead you're interested in the index folio 50, you can actually go in and change the percentage allocations there according to IFA's allocations. Just go to ifa.com and click on the portfolio you're interested in to see the different allocations of those portfolios. And you can get a year-to-date look, or you can change the adjusted price for however many years you're interested in. For example, the Index Folio 100, I have the adjusted price on there since March 15th, 2005. The adjusted annualized gain on that portfolio is 18.72%. And you can change that and backdate and go back as far as the funds exist. I think the first one you run into trouble with is the DFA Emerging Market Small Cap Fund. That's the newest one in there. And if you want to go back farther than that, then maybe just instead allocate a higher percentage to one of the other DFA Emerging Markets funds and wind the clock backwards and see what the performance of this portfolio is over a much longer term. For me, this is fun stuff to play with. I just love it. There's a column that is in the Wall Street Journal, weekly I believe it is, from James B. Stewart. His column called Common Sense. The most recent column he has is Lessons from an Awful August. Never sell in a time of panic. And here's what he says. He says, now it can be said with certainty, with stocks above their July 19 peaks last week, the August market turmoil was indeed a buying opportunity. As if you can't tell, he is a market timer. He says, here are some of my conclusions from the intervening 2.5 month period. One, there's something to be said for the old-fashioned buy and hold approach. While adroit traders had plenty of profit opportunities amidst the wrenching volatility, there were plenty of pitfalls too. Witness the closing of several prominent hedge funds amidst massive losses. You could have slept through the entire credit crisis, done nothing, and still come out ahead without paying any trading commissions. Two, never sell in a panic. I find you can't repeat this too often. On August 16th, when markets hit their low for this period and trading volume was massive and the panic selling was palpable, for every buyer, there was a seller. Right. No one has stepped forward to admit selling at the bottom, but there must have been millions of people doing it. Yeah, like those that do tax loss harvesting and then don't get back in. He says, leverage is dangerous. Many readers have asked me why, if stocks have always risen over the long term, I don't use leverage to boost returns. The answer is the short term, as we saw this summer. Another group of geniuses got wiped out. I don't pretend to be a genius. I want to sleep peacefully at night. I never want to be forced to sell by margin calls. The higher returns just aren't worth the higher risk. The S&P 500 stock index is up 11% this year. Even if your results are only average, what's so bad about that? And then finally he says, there will always be volatility in markets and accompanying buying and selling opportunities. Well, he says, there'll be another chance to get in. Well, that's market timing, my friend, and it's no way to run your investments. We'll be right back. I'll have a link in the show notes of show 82 to a prediction market, a betting market, if you will, for the next Nobel Prize winner in economics for 2007. The leading candidate so far with a asking price of 29 whatevers is Eugene Fama. Followed closely behind is someone named Robert Barrow, whom I do not know, and Paul Romer, 26. Well, I know a lot of folks would like to see Eugene Fama win the Nobel Prize, and when he does, it will certainly highlight the great academic work that he has done for investors around the world. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Men Machine Show 82 is Joseph Schumpeter. Joseph Alois Schumpeter, or like what I like to say is Schumpeter. Was born February 8th, 1883, and lived until January 8th, 1950. A Moravian-born economist and political scientist who was an Austrian and later became American. He is, as I say of most economists we talk about, one of the most influential economists who lived in the first half of the 20th century. And according to the biography of Joseph Schumpeter, out at the Concise Encyclopedia of Economics, can capitalism survive? No, I do not think it can. Thus opens Schumpeter's prologue to a section of his 1942 book, Capitalism, Socialism, and Democracy. One might think, on the basis of the quote, that Schumpeter was a Marxist, but the analysis that led Schumpeter to his conclusion differed totally from Karl Marx's. Marx believed that capitalism would be destroyed by its enemies, the proletariat, whom capitalism had purportedly exploited. Marx relished the prospect. Schumpeter believed that capitalism would be destroyed by its successes. Capitalism would spawn, he believed, a large intellectual class that made its living by attacking the very bourgeois system of private property and freedom so necessary for the intellectual class's existence. And unlike Marx, Schumpeter did not relish the destruction of capitalism. He wrote, "If a doctor predicts that his patient will die presently, this does not mean that he desires it." I could go on and on about Schumpeter, but I will not. Instead, I will direct you to the most recent edition of Econ Talk, hosted by Russ Roberts, who we interviewed here on the Madman Machine a couple shows ago. On his October 8th show, he has an interview with Thomas McCraw of Harvard University, who talks about the ideas of Joseph Schumpeter from his book, Profit of Innovation, Joseph Schumpeter and Creative Destruction. They talk about innovation, business strategy, and the role of mathematics in economics, and Schumpeter's vision of competition embodied in his most important idea, creative destruction. Well, congratulations, Joseph Schumpeter. You're the guru on Mad Men Machine Show 82. Let's pull a tool out of the tool crib. Well, you know, I'm an active reader, at least, if not participant, of the diehards.org/forum threaded discussion board. And there's a guy out there who very often has answers to people's questions, and usually in a mathematical vein. And it always points us to his website, which is gummy-stuff.org. Who is Gummy? He's born and raised in Toronto, Canada, attended the Universities of Toronto and Illinois, spent an inordinate number of years as a math professor at the University of Waterloo, raised four, count them four, chillin', well, not me exactly, mostly the missus, and now I'm living in microscopic hamlet north of Waterloo with the very same missus. Sleeping, painting, writing, making wine, some travel, and losing money. And this, like I said in the opening, this is like a flea market of investing information. If you go out to gummy-stuff.org and just scroll down that enormous list of a variety of topics where he explains stuff, one I pull out near the bottom is Does investing all at once beat dollar cost averaging over 10 months? When is it better to invest all at once rather than dollar cost average over 10 months? He says, if you click on the charts, the little tiny rectangles in the charts indicate when it's better to invest all at once. And so I click on the one for Canadian large cap, and it looks like most of the time I clicked on the one for U.S. large cap, and again, the rectangles cover most of the area. U.S. small cap, similar sort of thing. And if you go down, how many months to DCA, dollar cost average, how often does dollar cost average over N months beat all at once? And if you click there on one of those charts, you'll see that for U.S. large cap, dollar cost averaging goes down the more months you dollar cost average over. Starting with 2 months, it's at 35%, meaning it only 35% of the time does dollar cost averaging beat investing all at once. So if you don't have enough things to read about investing, go out to gummy-stuff.org, our tool in the crib this week, and spend a lifetime with this guy's charts. Fascinating stuff. That's our tool this week, gummystuff.org. And like all the tools I've given you so far, this one is free. When you think of taxes, what comes to mind? Federal income tax, perhaps? Or maybe your Social Security tax, or Medicare tax, or your state income tax? Or sales taxes, state and local? Yeah, you can have a city tax or a county tax. Or maybe your real estate tax or property tax on your car. Or a building permit tax if you're improving your house. Or utility taxes. Or capital gains taxes. Or gasoline tax. Or vehicle sales tax, or vehicle license registration tax, or toll booth taxes, or telephone taxes. Or how about taxes on your taxes, like IRS penalties and interest charges? The list, if you actually sit down and make one, of all the taxes we pay, goes on forever. I added up the taxes that we pay on our car in my state of Virginia. We have to register the car with the state. And we have to pay a county tax also for that car. For that car, we have to take it in for a state inspection every year or two. We also have to take that car in separately, perhaps, or perhaps at the same time, for an emissions inspection. And, of course, we also pay city tax where we live on our car to get a special sticker. So that is five different taxes that we pay for that one car. Pity the poor family that has four or more cars to deal with. That's 20 taxes for the four cars. It's getting a little bit out of control, don't you think? Now, how do we put all this stuff back in the bottle? How do we put the genie back in the bottle and eliminate some of these incessant taxes on everything that we are buying? Have a tea party? October's the 10th month. Let's turn to the 10th step in the 12-step program for active investors. Step 10, risk capacity. Analyze your five dimensions of risk capacity. A risk capacity survey will help you determine your individual and unique risk capacity. Five dimensions of your risk capacity will be thoroughly measured, resulting in a score and corresponding index portfolio. These risk capacity dimensions include time horizon, investment knowledge, net income, net worth, and attitude towards risk. This is your single most important contribution to the investing process, resulting in an investment policy statement that will provide the guidelines for your financial future. I'd like to bring in now Mark Hebner from his own podcast on the 12 Steps. Okay, Mark, risk capacity, or as you refer to it in your book, CEO investing. What does that stand for exactly, and how do the listeners go about developing some perspective as to what their own personal risk capacity is?
Well, CEO investing stands for capacity exposure optimization. What that means is job one for investors is to determining their risk capacity. In other words, how much risk is right for you? And then once we know that, we get an alignment of that capacity with a risk exposure. And when you do that, the best way, you end up with optimal returns. So that's why we call it CEO, capacity exposure optimization. If I may, I'm going to talk just a minute here about the elements of risk capacity. The first element or first dimension of risk capacity is time horizon or liquidity needs. In other words, when do you need your money? If you're investing for a very short period of time of, let's say, 2 years or so, you should take no stock market risk with your capital. It should just be in bonds, nice, safe investments. On the other hand, if you have 10 years or more, then you're able to subject your capital to the risk of stock markets because you have time for time diversification of your returns. A good year, a bad year, a bad year, a good year, a good year. They all smooth out over long periods of time, like 10 years. And ultimately, you will capture a market rate of return commensurate with the risk that you took. Secondly, is your attitude towards risk. Investors can have all of the other dimensions the same, but because we have different personalities, our attitudes towards taking risk will just vary. And so it's important that we get a sense of how much of a risk taker you are. Thirdly, we like to look at net worth, and also we look at net income. And then finally, we look at your investment knowledge. The more understanding you have about the risks you're taking actually improves your capacity to take on more risk. So once we have a quantification of these various dimensions for each investor, we can come up with a score between 1 and 100, which gives a good indication of how much risk is right for that investor.
All right, thanks a lot, Mark. Next week, we're going to get into a little more detail about the risk capacity survey. In the meantime, you can go out to ifa.com and take it yourself. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes listening to the show to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next week or two. I'm going to do 4 shows in October. Not sure exactly on which dates, but I'll see you soon. In the meantime, you know what to do. Please go visit ifa.com, Index Funds Advisors. Some music on this show provided by music.podshow.com. Got a question, comment, complaint, or criticism? Call me at the voicemail line, 206-734-4763, or email me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com. And do visit the website, madmoneymachine.com. Thank you so much.